Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 11:10 British Summer Time. Today is July 6th, today being Friday. It's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And indeed, the last 4 weeks, we've had quite an impressive rally all the way through July. Last week was characterized by an historic decision by the Eurozone to set up a banking union, which will discussions are ongoing. There will be proposals produced towards the end of the year. But the end of the year is still 5 months away, and markets tend to be a bit more short-term oriented than that. This week was characterized by the ECB lowering interest rates, by the People's Bank of China lowering interest rates, and by the Bank of England increasing its stimulus. The US Treasury was absent from that troika, but with jobs growth being pretty stagnant, some form of stimulative action, or more correctly, additional stimulative action by the Federal Reserve certainly can't be ruled out. What we've seen is that the majority of stock markets have had a very good rally for the majority of June. I've done a number of share reviews this week. A common theme is evident, that the majority of stock markets bounced emphatically all the way through June. There is a short-term overbought condition evident on a substantial number, and that we are now looking at least a consolidation of recent gains. Provided the June lows hold for the majority of the stock markets, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Commodities bounced emphatically in the early part of this week. Oil in particular, West Texas Intermediate, has rallied from under $80 to almost $90. It's pulled back by almost $3 in here today. It's at $84.45 at the close. Brent crude has a pretty similar condition with a $10 premium. Natural gas, having gone right up and looked at the $3 level in here today, pulled back by almost 17 cents. It's at $2.77. Natural gas has rallied by about 50% in the last few months. It's posted a higher reaction low. It's now posted a higher high. It's a bit overbought in the short term. $3 represents a natural area of resistance. Provided it holds above its recent low, which is, to the best of my memory, in the region of $2.20, then the potential for an additional recovery in pricing will remain intact. Where we're looking now, and where is perhaps the focus of investor attention, is what's happening in Spain. Because with last week's news of the banking union, Spanish banks got some relief. The Spanish IBEX index was one of the strongest ralliers. Italy wasn't that far behind. They're both pulling back in here today. The Spanish market is down 3%. The Italian market is down 2.5%. And German Bunds found support in the region of 140 early this week or late last week. That also represents the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying trading range. It was a natural area for them to find support. And they've rallied rather impressively, almost 3 full points in the course of the week. Correspondingly, Spanish government bond yields went over 7% today, and short-dated German bonds, I think less than 1 year maturities, now yield negative yields. The ECB has lowered interest rates. It has said that it doesn't see a particular need for additional non-standard stimulative measures at present. the stock market and investors haven't taken particularly kindly to that news. And particularly in view of the fact that we have short-term overbought conditions on so many of these risk assets, then the potential for an additional drawdown and a retest of those June lows, whether that is a late June low or an early June low, has increased somewhat in here. Now, when we look at the big picture, the sovereign bond markets are in rarefied territory. Yields are at historic lows, or at least close to historic lows. It does now look like we're going to see whether these yields are going to encounter support or the bonds are going to encounter resistance as they approach their peaks. What does look likely is that we've seen some concerted central bank action this week. What we've endured over the last 3 years has been a volatile environment. And that volatility has been, at least in part, fed by the reactions of central banks and the rather haphazard approach to deleveraging that has taken place since the credit crisis in 2008. If you look at 10 years on the S&P 500, the 5 years from 2003, or 4.5 years from 2003 all the way through to late 2007, were characterized by a relatively consistent uptrend. And whereas over the last 3 years, we've had almost the exact same percentage advance, it's been considerably less consistent. And what we've seen is that we've had spectacular rallies, which have been followed by very deep drawdowns. Then markets have begun to find support. There's been stimulative action. We get another spectacular rally. Then that stimulus runs out. Fresh fears about the health of the global economy erupt once more. Then you get these big drawdowns. We're now approaching another scenario where central banks are moving to increase stimulus. And that would suggest that even though sentiment is really quite bearish, and even though there are a considerable number of things to worry about, that monetary policy trumps most other factors most of the time. And central banks are once more moving into this stimulative type of environment, and that should help to support risk assets over the medium term. Over the short term, there is additional potential for at least a consolidation of what have been really quite powerful gains over the short term, over the last 4 weeks. When we look at the performance of various sectors, there has been a clear divergence between consumer-oriented shares and those with an industrial bias since August of last year. At the current juncture, the industrial complex has pulled back so remarkably sharply that a large number of those types of shares, whether they are industrially oriented in the manufacturing sector or engineering or chemicals or mining or energy, they are now into potential areas of support. They've all bounced emphatically in the last few weeks. It is now for the bulls to prove that demand has returned to dominance beyond the short term, and they will all need to post higher reaction lows in the next week or two to really demonstrate that demand is back in the driver's seat. The commodity complex was deeply oversold and probably best viewed on the continuous commodity index, which was an unweighted index of essential commodities. It was deeply oversold relative to the 200-day moving average. We've had an emphatic bounce over the last couple of weeks. At least part of that oversold condition has been unwound. And if the commodity complex is now in a position where demand is returning to dominance, then it is going to consolidate, it's going to find support above its recent low, and then move on to a new recovery high. The continuous commodity index is still within the confines of a medium-term downtrend, and it will need to push back above its 200-day moving average to really conclusively tell us that the demand component is back in the driver's seat beyond the short term. We are at an interesting juncture for a number of markets. The Eurozone economy is in recession. China is increasingly rolling back its tightening measures. It's doing so in a targeted fashion. And also of interest is that the renminbi has fallen through the, or probably best talked about, the US dollar has pushed up through the 200-day moving average relative to the renminbi for the first time since 1994. 1994 represented the time when the Chinese devalued their currency. The Chinese are... There's a lot of debate about whether China is going to allow its currency to float and just how deep are the pressures on the Chinese economy. But what is probably overlooked is that when you have a currency that has been strengthening for a considerable period of time and where wages have been rising and where there's been inflationary pressures, that is what had the, and of course where they were leaning heavily on the housing market, it would be, well, the slowdown in their economy is exactly what was engineered. If they're going to avoid an outright crash in the housing market, then they're doing exactly what is needed, and they're lowering interest rates and they're easing up on some of their tightening measures, which were incredibly broad-based. The stock market is historically cheap, but it needs to break its progression of lower rally highs to suggest that demand is returning to dominance. The A-share index is probably not the best index to monitor because of the evolution that is being engineered in the Chinese economy. They crossed a Rubicon in the last few years where they gained more economic benefit per dollar spent on improving their human capital than in building infrastructure. China has world-class infrastructure. It obviously has not going to stop building. There is still a lot of work to do, but it has done enough so that it can focus on other areas to gain more economic benefit. And that is where we're seeing a focus on increasing the minimum wage, in making healthcare more widely available, and on social issues such as the environment and indeed social security. That would suggest that the consumer sector is much more indicative of what's actually happening in China now. If the last decade was about infrastructure development, there's the very strong likelihood that the next decade is going to be about the birth of the consumer sector in China and the unleashing of trillions of dollars worth of potential value in that, in evolving the consumer base in China. India has had one of the better performing stock markets over the last couple of months. It has benefited from the fall in oil prices. It's also benefiting from the weakness of its currency. The currency has found at least short-term support. The stock market is beginning to respond to that. It is a bit overbought in the short term, but provided it holds the progression of higher reaction lows, then the Indian market should continue to advance in this environment. Sentiment is remarkably bearish, but the main theme that has animated markets and animated some of the better performing sectors over the last few years remains very much intact. We're still in the greatest urbanization in history. we're still in an environment where hundreds of millions of newly minted consumers are increasing the demand for just about everything. And the companies that are leveraged to providing these people with exactly what they want and indeed what they need are outperforming in no uncertain terms. These have the autonomy sector, and we've defined the autonomies as globally oriented companies which have a dominant position in their respective niches, where they have outgrown their domestic markets and are truly global, and where they have strong balance sheets and often a long record of increasing their dividends. This sector has provided some of the most consistent trends over the last few years. They certainly don't all go up together. We've seen that companies such as McDonald's and Nike have become less consistent, whereas they had previously been some of the best performing shares. And we've seen a bit of a movement out of those types of shares and into pharmaceuticals, which have highly attractive yields, and as a sector are breaking upwards in here. Companies like Merck, Pfizer, Eli Lilly, GlaxoSmithKline are all breaking upwards, are hitting new multi-year highs, and have some of the most attractive yields anywhere. So the autonomy sector continues to offer consistent trends, and we are beginning to see some sort of rotation in that particular market. The oil price has pulled back sharply, not least because people have been worried about the state of the global economy. High oil prices act as a tax on growth. Lower oil prices are certainly a comfort. The USA, because of the shale gas boom and because of the shale oil boom, it's probably not so much in its interest to have extraordinarily low oil prices. But oil prices in the current area are probably reasonably comfortable for a US dollar economy. From the perspective of the Eurozone, the euro has hit a new low. Because of the weakness of the currency, commodity prices are having that bit more of an impact. The fact that commodity prices have pulled back so sharply has lessened inflationary pressures for the Eurozone, but the weakness of the currency is going to exacerbate them if the euro continues to decline. And particularly in the current environment, there is no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And at present, that is without a shadow of a doubt the Eurozone. The euro closed out today at 122.91. That's a new, I think, 2-year low. It's extended its downtrend. It really would now need a clear upward dynamic to check potential for additional downside. The weakness of the currency is certainly going to help countries like Italy and Spain, Portugal, Ireland and Greece. It's probably going to also flatter the balance sheets of export-oriented companies, such as many in Germany and other northern European countries. The euro continues to look like it's a weak currency, and it's the weakest of a weak lot. The dollar has strengthened considerably over the last couple of months. It's also a bit overbought in the short term. It's weakened quite substantially this week, particularly against some comparatively strong currencies, particularly those in the ASEAN region. The Philippine peso in particular has been among the very best performers. When we look at the global stock market picture and look at what is actually making headlines, what's making headlines is the Eurozone crisis. What's making headlines is the US presidential election and US jobs data. But the stock markets that are actually hitting new highs are the Philippines, Malaysia. Indonesia's not that far off, neither is Thailand. South Africa hit a new high in the last few months. It's pulled back sharply. Now it's rallying back up towards its high. Then you also have the Mexican market, which has pushed on to new high ground. None of these markets are particularly hitting headlines. But what we've seen over the last 3 years is that the ASEAN region represents some of the fastest growing economies, and also where you're getting a major increase in the size of the consumer class. And the stock markets have performed. But they've also been leading stock markets. And leading is not just about relative strength. It's a temporal designation. And by that I mean it's a timing designation. The ASEAN markets bottomed way early. They bottomed in 2008. The S&P didn't bottom until 2009. They were breaking out of their base when the S&P was bottoming. They were among the first markets to take out their 2007 to 2008 peaks. And they've been some of the best outright performers. They've been some of the first to move into corrective phases, and they've been some of the first to come out of corrective phases. The fact that we're seeing an increasing number of markets pushing onto new high ground is a positive outcome. It does suggest that there is room to be a bit more bullish about the prospects for risk assets over the medium term. If we are looking at the central banks increasing the supply of money or increasing liquidity or making life a bit easier for speculators, then there is the likelihood that we are going to see risk assets find support above their June lows and then push on to new high ground. When we take a big step back and look at the very long term, the S&P has been range bound for the last 10 years. We've defined this as a secular PE contraction and process of rising dividend yields. We're at also an interesting juncture at present because the S&P yields more than US Treasuries. That hasn't been the case since the late 1950s. Prior to the late 1950s, equities always yielded more than governments. To allow for the perception of additional risk that was in the stock market. When we look at the strong balance sheets in the autonomy sector and compare that to the balance sheet of various governments, then the autonomy sector looks cheap, particularly when one looks at the compression that we've seen in corporate bonds relative to the compression that we've seen in equity yields. There's been a lot more demand for government for corporate bonds compared to the equities. That would suggest that as yield continues to take on a premium and as people remain uncertain, the people that really want to lock in yield for the long term should be looking more at equities rather than attempting to play momentum in the government bond markets, because government bonds yielding, I think, 1.3% for bunds, definitely less than 2% across the USA, UK, Japan, and the Eurozone, then one can get double that in high-quality equities, where the risk premium is considerably better from the perspective of a medium to long-term investor. And that isn't something that's going to change in the short term. If we look at where there are bubbles evident and where the next bubbles are likely to be, then government bonds, particularly those of the more indebted countries, they highlight the paradox of the government bond markets or just about any other market, in that the markets that are most liquid are generally for the issuers that have the most debt. And that is certainly the case for the USA, for Europe, and for Japan. Those represent a bubble that is going to burst at some point. The reason I look at these total return indices, and I posted a number of them in Comment of the Day today, is because these also represent some of the most consistent trends that are out there. And when they lose their consistency, when they pull back below their 200-day moving averages and encounter resistance in the region of their MAs, then the secular bull market, which has been in place for 30 years for US Treasuries, will be over. And then we'll have conclusive evidence. But until then, it has all the characteristics of a bubble, except for the fact that it has not bust yet. Alternatively, US stock markets have been largely range-bound for a decade. In fact, it's been 12 years. The last secular period, a process of PE ratio contraction, rising dividend yields, was from 1965 to 1980. And when it was completed, the market moved into a 20-year bull market. There's no reason to expect that when the current ranging phase has ended, that the wider market will move into another secular bull, where the S&P and the Dow Jones will move on to new all-time highs and then extend those highs by a considerable margin over the subsequent decades. So we've been in this volatile, difficult, range-bound environment for 12 years. The perception is that it will never end, but of course it will end, and when it does, we'll be in a new secular bull market. Gold has been rallying for the last, I think it's 10 consecutive years. It has the potential to improve on that performance once more. It could easily put in an additional year to the upside this year. There's no great degree of evidence that this bull market has ended. If some of the most bullish forecasts are going to be met, then this market will climax in gold fever, and the price could go up quite a bit from where the high was last September, in the region of $1,900. But if the secular bull market is going to be reasserted, then the lows in the region of $1,500 will need to hold. Gold has been largely range-bound between about $1,520 and $1,600 for the last few months. It got right up to and in excess of $1,600 this week, and it's closing out the week down almost $21 today. It'll need to find support above the recent lows and push and sustain a move above $1,600 to really start to gain adherence once more and to stimulate investors to come back in and push it on to not only back above $1,700 and $1,800, but to new highs to reassert the uptrend. And at present, it remains within this range-bound environment. There's all of the bullish arguments that have been valid for gold over the last decades remain valid today. What we have to bear in mind is that the arguments don't matter if the chart action doesn't match up with the hypothesis. If gold is going to remain relatively consistent, it will have to find support above $1,500. It will have to push back above its 200-day moving average and then begin to push on to new high ground. So we remain very much within a decision-making process, and every single range is a decision-making process. Every single range is an explosion waiting to happen. And if gold is going to explode on the upside, it will need to find support in the current region. Silver also pulled back rather sharply in here today, so did platinum and palladium. They also will need to find support above their respective June lows if the medium-term upside is to continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. The grain and bean complex has rallied spectacularly over the last few sessions. It was weaker in here today. There's a short-term overbought condition evident on a large number of commodities. This remains a trying period for many investors because of the incredible volatility that we've had to put up with. But there are plenty of opportunities for relatively nimble investors in the commodity complex. And if we are going to find support in here, then particularly in the industrial metal complex, prices are quite depressed. So there are going to be opportunities on the long side, particularly in the industrial complex, if we start to see central banks moving to a much more stimulative environment. Feeder cattle looks susceptible to an additional pullback. When we take the big picture perspective, we want to look on overextensions relative to the 200-day moving average as potential to lighten positions and to crystallize profits. And when we get the pullbacks, when we start to see that support is being found, particularly if it's in the region of the 200-day moving average, then for a consistent trend, that represents the buying opportunities. And we're moving into another little corrective phase in here, and that could represent the next potential buying opportunity from the perspective of a medium-term investor. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.